Welcome back. This is Harry Brown. This is the second hour of the Libertarian Conversation for Saturday night, October 22nd. My guest is Jim Babka of Downsize DC. And before we went to the news break, we were talking about the Read the Bills Act, and Eugene posed the question of what would happen if they got around this by just starting to pass all-inclusive bills that gave somebody else the authority to do whatever they wanted, like telling the Drug Enforcement Agency that it could declare anything it wanted illegal, or telling the guy who runs the budget to appropriate anything he wanted. And Jim was talking about that. Jim, is there anything further you want to add to the point that this was just the beginning?
Yeah, you know, Eugene's question really was good. I've done a number of interviews on this subject, and this was a question we'd asked ourselves many months ago, but he is the first person. He's distinguished himself by being the very first person that's asked me this question on a call-in radio show. You know, there's another issue here, though, that I didn't get a chance to get to during the previous segment, and I think is equally as important. And essentially, there's an implication in Eugene's question that somehow or other we trust Congress to protect us from the bureaucrats. The bureaucrats are the real criminals. And I'm not so sure that that's true. First of all, Congress doesn't control most of the money that's spent. They don't, you know, say, well, you've got this much for paper clips and this much for scotch tape and this much to pay so-and-so. They don't make those kind of decisions. When they do make those decisions, they're called earmarks. Your audience will know the word pork a little bit better than they will earmarks, but that's when they do a specific set-aside for a specific person or group or company in their district who has done them some political favor, and now they're looking to return the favor, or who's going to give them good publicity on the evening news because they did this favor. And so that's, you know, when they're getting specific, it's an earmark. It's pork that they're doing it for. And finally, if they don't manage the government properly, if they pass a bill that tells the DEA that they can do whatever they want, and by the way, that's something we can lobby for. We can always lobby to have things added to the bill to say, look, there should be more restrictions in here. But if they do pass a bill that gives the DEA or any other entity the ability to go willy-nilly, then we have the ability to vote them out of office for being so irresponsible. The real point here behind the Read the Bills Act is we want them handling far less legislation, passing far less, and having a smaller government as a result.
Yeah, very good point. All right, what are some of the other things that you have in the pipeline right now?
Well, yes, definitely. We've had some things to say about this recent crisis down in New Orleans. We ran a series of issues on that, and they're still up on the website that people can look at right now. First of all, we called for bringing home the National Guard. 7,000 members of the Louisiana and Mississippi National Guard were stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan at the time that the hurricane hit, and they were helpless to be there. They had to sit and watch on television like the rest of us, wondering what had happened to family members and friends. And in some cases, these were the people who would have been the first responders in this particular crisis and were needed. Their technical expertise and equipment was needed. One of the things that's been talked about is that there was not enough helicopter airlift. Well, some of the helicopter equipment was in Iraq at that time. The National Guard was not designed to go save the world. It was supposed to be an entity that stayed at home and took care of business. And so we called for bringing home the National Guard. We called for an end to federal flood insurance. You can send a message to Congress. We believe this actually encourages people to build their houses in unsafe areas where they can't get insurance for floods anymore, and so they put their house in an area that maybe they shouldn't have. And now we, the taxpayers, are going to foot the bill to build this house again. And I'm not saying this out of a lack of compassion. I'm just saying that would people have made different choices if they would have had to bear the consequences of those choices in advance? And I think the answer is almost assuredly yes. We've also said,
if they'd known they were going to have to bear the consequences. Jack Kemp, in his entire political career, probably said only one intelligent thing, and that was that if you want more of something, subsidize it. If you want less of it, tax it. And you get more of people building in unsafe areas by telling them the federal government is going to insure them.
Right. And so we went, and we had two more steps that we took. We asked people to say no to the New Deal. George Bush has stood up, and his solution to the problem is that he wants to create vast new entitlements and programs to deal with the situation. He wants to spend massive amounts of money. And I was amazed. I told you this on the phone when we were talking this week, Harry, as I was watching the night that the president gave his speech in New Orleans announcing all these programs, Tim Russert, who usually is very sober and talking about who won and who lost and, you know, what the political ramifications are going to be, was absolutely giddy. He was like a little boy, you know, Timmy Russert jumping up and down. He's like, this is like FDR all over again. This is like the New Deal all over again. This is like going to be the first city, the first American city of the 21st century. This is so exciting. It'll bring us together. And we obviously don't share that point of view. We believe that the government should be downsized, and so we gave people an opportunity to do that. And our last thing that we did on this, we called Sacrifice the Pig. And essentially,
what's that again?
Sacrifice the pig. Yeah, it was about pork. We wanted, we want to ask the question, you know, when a crisis like this happens, the president and other politicians will stand up and say, well, we need to sacrifice. The American people need to come together and sacrifice for this. Well, no, why don't the politicians sacrifice? Why don't they give up their earmark and pork projects that they're sending back to their districts to offset the cost of paying for all this disaster relief they want to do? Of course they're not going to do that, but we wanted to call attention to the hypocrisy of it, and so we've given the opportunity with the Sacrifice the Pig campaign. And that was our four-part response to what's gone on down in New Orleans.
I think it's very important to realize, too, that even if you are not big enough to make a difference yet, that just calling attention to the alternatives is a very, very important thing. That you're not going to be able to reach tens of millions of people, but the people you do reach begin to realize that it doesn't have to be this way, that there are alternatives, and that there are people working so that it won't have to be this way. And I think all of that is very, very important on two counts. Number one, you are giving hope and sustenance and encouragement to people who think that they're all alone, and to any of those that hear you. And secondly, you're letting those that hear you know that there is an alternative to just throwing money there from Washington, and they suddenly realize, yeah, you know, I never thought about that before. And at least somebody has been awakened by it. And this is all in the process of, while you're growing, to get to the size where you actually can make a difference in Congress. And you're certainly headed in that direction because your growth has been at a very, very good rate.
Yeah, it's been so big we can't even contain it. You know, we've spent most of our time talking about downsizeddc.org, but what you just said, Harry, made me think of our sister organization, the Downsize DC Foundation, which I'm also the president of. Over at downsizeddc.com, we've been telling these stories. We've been trying to demonstrate alternatives to big government. We've been explaining that downsizing DC leads to human progress, and that entrepreneurs, innovators, businesses every day are meeting people's needs. Churches, charities, neighbors, and communities of people are gathering together every day to assist each other without a dime of federal government money being spent to make these wonderful things happen in healthcare, the environment, and other social issues that we're looking to address.
And so why is the government buttoned in?
Exactly. So they can check out some of the things that we've put a scope on at downsizeddc.com, and that's kind of our alternative, is to explain that as well.
Oh, good. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is Harry Brown. Don't go away. Jim Baptist, my guest, and you should stay aboard. The phone number is 1-800-259-9231 if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll be back in just 3 minutes.
In the 1960s, the politicians promised us that war on poverty would end hardship and suffering.
Instead, countless Americans now live trapped in despair. Billions of our tax dollars have been spent. And after 40 long years, the war remains to be won.
In the 1970s, the politicians promised us the war on drugs would reduce drug abuse and crime.
Instead, we've witnessed an increase in drug abuse, rising crime rates, and growing prison populations.
Most recently, the politicians promised us the war on illiteracy would improve our educational system.
Instead, our children's reading scores are plummeting. Many high school graduates struggle with the most basic English. And many politicians refuse to send their sons and daughters to the same schools they expect our children to attend.
Politicians rarely deliver what they promise. Usually, they deliver the opposite. Learn how you can make a difference. Visit DownsizeDC.com. That's DownsizeDC.com.
It's up to us.
With that lovely music by Dvorak, I'm pleased to be back again. This is Harry Brown, and Jim Babka is my guest from DownsizeDC.org, and there is a link to it on the Radio Links page on my website, HarryBrown.org. But you really don't need to go there. You all got to do is enter www.DownsizeDC.org. DownsizeDC is all one word, and you'll go straight to the site. Now, you have a sister organization all under the umbrella of the Downsize DC Foundation, and that sister organization is DownsizeDC.com instead of org. And what's going on there?
Well, you know, we have a news blog there. People can come there and they can learn about what we're doing and find out kind of the alternative, the other side of the coin. You know, if DownsizeDC.org is the exodus, you know, it's the way out of big government, then DownsizeDC.com is the promised land. It's our opportunity. It's our opportunity to talk about what the world would be like when government isn't involved. And we've got examples of this every day. You know, we've got wonderful things happening in healthcare right now. People that are coming up with innovations that will continue to lengthen life and people will live longer and longer and healthier in the process. We have things in the environment. You know, there are all kinds of alternative fuels and ways of creating energy that are being worked on right now. We're beginning to see some of those in our cars and our homes, but those things are going to continue to come. And as people are talking about this energy crisis this year, that many of them don't realize how much of the energy crisis is government imposed. But what's really great is that as this thing gets worse, the profit motive is going up for alternatives to come into place that are cleaner, for the environment, and they're going to be more economical, and in many cases can be regenerated. In one case, there's a car called a grease car that's literally run on vegetable oil. I don't know if this is feasible at this point yet, but the point is there is a prototype, and it is out there on the roads right now, and Willie Nelson is so interested in it, he invested in it. I mean, there's all kinds of these different types of opportunities. There's the more with less revolution, the fact that we are able to do so much more with so much less, that computers, for example, the storage mediums continue to get smaller and smaller and smaller, but the amount of memory that they hold gets larger and larger and larger, while the cost gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And so we've got examples of this all across the board, and this is not being delivered to you by the government. You know, if government had solved the problem of polio, we would have the best iron lungs imaginable. And so what we're trying to do is demonstrate that the free market is the solution, and neighbors and communities and churches and charities are the solution, and individual initiative is the solution. We really shouldn't be turning to government to solve our problems.
And in some cases, the solutions and the innovations are there, and they're being blocked by government. Mary Ruart was on our show 3 weeks ago, and she was a research scientist at Upjohn. And she pointed out that they had a cure for liver cancer. But to get through the regulations and to meet all the requirements that the government put would take as long as their patent was good. So by the time they cleared all the regulatory hurdles and got the drug on the market, it would be generic. And they would not be able to profit from it, because everybody and his brother would be able to issue a duplicate of it, a clone of it. And so they just abandoned the whole project, even though they were 90% sure that they had already found it and all they had to do was to go, you know, complete the test. But it was worthless to them to complete the test. And there are probably thousands of examples like that we don't know about, that exist in and affect all the regulatory agencies. But as you point out, a lot of these things are being developed and are getting on the market all the time. One of the interesting alternatives was during when Hurricane, I guess it was Katrina, hit Florida first before it hit New Orleans. Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, had nothing to help people with, no generators, no water, no anything, but people could go into the Walmart store and buy all these things. The Walmart had anticipated what was going to happen, and their trucks and their trains had brought it all in and stocked up all the Walmart stores in the area, and so people could go in and buy a generator for $300, while FEMA, which was giving them away for free because they didn't have any, wasn't able to help anybody.
And they blocked materials from getting to people, too. There was all kinds of offers of assistance and people wanting to get in to do things and help them, truckloads of stuff that got held back or blocked or whatever. And you know, we see this as a very, very important issue, Harry, and the way that we like to look at this is a metaphor we call the race. And by that I mean that there is a race between big government taxes and regulation and innovation in the private sector. And if government regulation and taxation overtakes the private sector, or even gets to the point where it can grab the back of its jersey in the race and slow it down, we all lose. And in fact, if they overtake it completely in a totalitarian fashion, we go back to the Dark Ages. We literally go backwards, and we've seen this in communist countries. And so what we believe, this issue is so important. People need to be understand clearly what business is really all about and how a private free market works and how private cooperation works, as opposed to how big government force works.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I really think that's a wonderful education program. And, of course, it's very, very positive. It's not just the evils of government. It is the blessings of liberty. And, you know, as I've said so often on this show that people are tired of hearing it, that whatever the problem, government is not the solution, and whatever the problem, more liberty is the solution. And you're pointing out examples of that. And I think that getting these examples out to the public is very, very good. And helping people to generalize on it is important, too. This isn't just an isolated thing that this particular company has been able to solve this particular problem for a cost, a fraction of what government is going to charge us for it and not even accomplish it. But that this is a general principle that in all cases that the free market can do this where government can't. So anything you can do along that line, I'm all for. So this is going on contemporaneously with your more specific programs to get at government through downsizedc.org.
Yeah, there's a great deal of material on there. Now, Harry, before I go, I want to be able to ask you a question, if I may. Harry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Fire away.
I wanted to make sure it was okay. I was waiting for that yes, that approval. This is the Harry Brown Show.
That's what this show is all about, asking questions.
Okay. Well, recently a prominent freedom activist suggested to a live audience that the Read the Bills Act wasn't going anywhere and that it was just a vehicle to shed light on how awful Capitol Hill is, which clearly we want to do. But we actually see it being able to go further, and I believe it can pass, and would love to explain why. But I really would like to hear what you think of the Read the Bills Act and what you think about what it could do.
Oh, I would be glad to give my opinion, but we're out of time, so I guess I can't do that. No, we will be back after the commercials. And when we do, I will be glad to tell you what I think about this, and I think I may surprise you on some count. This is Harry Brown, Jim Baptist, my guest. Don't go away!
If you produce computer storage media, you need GlideRite test heads. GlideRite is a major supplier of test heads to most media manufacturers in the U.S. and Asia. In addition, GlideRite produces glide heads, burnish heads, certifier heads, and thermal asperity heads, focusing on meeting your specific needs with short turnaround times and optimum quality, all at a competitive price. GlideRite's delivery performance is unmatched, whether quantities are large or small. GlideRite has manufacturing facilities in Milpitas, California, and Ho Chi Minh, Vietnam. Each site is equipped with state-of-the-art tooling and computerized equipment. GlideRite's services include research and development, new design and technology, and engineering support. Whether you need standard heads or customized solutions, GlideRite is your expert source. So when designing hard disks, always specify GlideRite.
Harry Brown here. Jim Baptist, my guest. DownsizeDC.org is the organization. And before we went to the break, Jim asked me my opinion of the Read the Bills Act. Well, let me start by saying that as long as I have been actively involved in libertarian politics, which has been now about 11 years, I have always focused on what I think of as the, well, I was going to say practical side, but that isn't the proper word. What I want to see is something happen that actually reduces government. I don't want to see some little catchy thing, this, that, or the other thing. I want to see a reduction in government. I want to see bills, not just defeated, but programs eliminated. I want to see some actual change in government, and that's where I've always paid my attention. And my support even for term limits has been lukewarm because it just seems to be a technical change in the way Congress operates and the way things are done, and that may or may not lead to something. But I really believe that in terms of technical changes, that this Read the Bills Act is the most important thing that could be done, because it encompasses so much in one particular thing. Number one, it slows down the process. Number two, it chops up these enormous bills. Number three, it makes every congressman responsible. Number four, it gives the public an opportunity to actually see what these people are going to vote on before they vote on it, and not just this is a bill to put more policemen on the street, but how many policemen, how much is it going to cost, how is this going to be done, where is the money going to go, and so forth, and it's all laid out there on the Internet for anybody to see. It's not some blurry thing that says, this is good, just read the title and you know it's going to do some good, because the title usually has nothing to do with what's in the bill, or very little. So I see this as a real blow at big government. As I say, if nothing else, it would slow down the process, but it does a lot more than that. So for the first time, I am enthusiastic about a technological innovation that has to do with the way Congress operates. So I'm all for you, Jim. And this was your idea, even though I am I should have said this a long time ago. I am associated with Downsize DC. I don't know what my position is right now. I think I'm director of public policy, and I was writing a lot of articles that appeared there, and then I contracted this illness, and I've been really slow getting back to doing many of the things that I was doing beforehand. But even though I am associated with Downsize DC, I was not involved in the development of this, and I really congratulate you on coming up with this. I believe this was all your idea, wasn't it?
Well, I had a great deal of help from some other people, namely Perry Willis. I mean, when I came up with the idea of a 7-day waiting period, he came up with the idea of making them sit through a reading of the bill. And we both thought our respective idea was better than the other. And then it was kind of like the old peanut butter, the Reese's peanut butter cup commercial. We stuck the chocolate in the peanut butter and said, hey, this is a whole lot better. And so I have to share credit with Perry, but we consulted with a number of people as we were developing this.
Oh, I know that once you had the idea, you talked to a lot of people and got a lot of good ideas, and even talked to some of the people that work in Congress. We should mention that Perry Willis is back working with the foundation. Perry Willis is a great writer, a great libertarian writer, and he gave me a lot of ideas during the campaign that were very, very useful in addition to his organizing capabilities as the campaign manager. He was a fantastic campaign manager in organizing that campaign and making so much with so little money available. But he's especially good in creative work, and I'm so glad that he is working with you now. And I can well understand that he had a lot to do with this. So I congratulate you. I really do think that this is a wonderful thing, and it has my ringing endorsement.
Well, I really appreciate that, and the words that you've expressed were both very much to the point, but also just so powerful. You know, when we got the news that someone had stood up in front of an audience full of people, and I don't want to mention any names, and said, hey, you know, the Read the Bills Act is just basically a publicity game, I was kind of taken aback by that because we are very serious about this. And I made a trip to Washington, D.C., last month, and we met with 8 congressional offices, the first trip of that kind. We took several people who happen to be constituents of most of those offices, and we sat across the table from them, and we learned something very important. As you're walking through this town, you can't get from point A to point B in a straight line because there's security everywhere, and the whole town is in the grip of paranoia, particularly up there on the hill. And they're paranoid even when they get to the office, too. We had a very interesting appointment. My favorite appointment was with a Senate staffer, and I referred to him earlier, talking about how they needed to have the brakes put on. But he had told us that this idea wasn't going to work, it wasn't very good, that there was a lot of problems with it. He was initially very negative. But we had a guy who was one of his constituents in the room there with them who had been interviewed by his local paper before he made the trip to Washington. And the local paper loved the Read the Bills Act. And he said, well, I'm going back after this meeting's over, and I'm going to have another interview with them. They wanted to know how my appointments up here on Capitol Hill went. I'm not clear on what exactly happened here. What should I tell them? Well, this gentleman, whose name was Brian, literally straightened up in his chair, and a smile came across his face, a kind of plastic smile, like he would be standing in front of the media. And he said, you tell them that you had a successful meeting with the congressman. It was very productive. He's very interested in your proposal, and he's taking it into consideration. They cannot tell the public, Harry, that they oppose this bill. And I could give you story after story of our trip illustrating this. We don't have time here in this short time. But you know, story after story that they cannot tell. They're not going to want to tell the media and crowds of people back home that they don't believe they have a responsibility to read the bills and that they should pass everything that comes across their desk without checking it out, and they should continue to spend all the money they're spending. They want the people back home to believe that they're being responsible, that they're taking things into consideration, that they are spending the money carefully, and in the words of Tom DeLay, they're making sure that they squeeze all the fat out. And so, you know, that's what they're trying, the image that they're trying to put out there. And so when the word gets back home, that's what they're going to need to do. So at downsizedc.org, we have a simple goal. We want to be so big and so loud and make our voice so well heard that they have to respond. They have to respond out on the campaign trail. They have to respond when they go and shake hands and kiss babies. They have to answer this question over and over again. When they get interviewed by their local media, they keep getting the Read the Bills questions so that they say, well, yes, I support the Read the Bills. Because if they don't, then the voter's going to be upset with them.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I'll deal with that cheap trick, publicity trick, when we come back. This is Harry Brown. The phone number is 1-800-259-9231. We've got time for one more phone call. If you want to call, we'll be right back. Jim Babka, and we have a very interesting email from Pierre out in cyberspace, and I think it came in about an hour ago and slipped through the cracks, and I'm really sorry because he's got two very interesting questions, and I hope we have time to deal with them all. The first one is, he says, I'm all for the Read the Bills Act. It's a clever piece of legislation, but from a pragmatic point of view, it could work so well to reduce government that don't you suppose it is certain not to be passed? And if I may, I'd like to take a swing at that. And that is that what Jim's trying to do here is to build enough of momentum, enough mass of people who know about this bill and are lobbying congressmen, that to vote against this bill will put the congressman in a very, very bad light, not just at the election time, but in the local newspapers and other places, that he was not willing to take responsibility for the bills that he passes. Anything you want to add to that, Jim?
There's very little to add. I except to say that, you know, if there was anything that, you know, someone wanted to know what's the most important objective DownsizeDC.org has, I would simply say we went all the way back to the beginning of this conversation to MoveOn.org, going from 100 people in 1998 to 2.2 million on their email list in 2004. We want to do the same thing. We want to have a very big, intense following, and we believe that that following exists out there. We just have to simply go out and find them. Surveys have found that 16% of the public believes that the government shouldn't be doing more on social issues, nor should it be doing more on moral issues, nor should it be doing more on economic issues. They have a libertarian viewpoint. And as we talk to people, you can remember from your campaign, Harry, when you ask people if they believe government is too big or too small, they all say that it's too big, and some even go so far as to say it's way too big.
Way too big.
Yeah, so we're just attempting to take advantage of that with Downsize DC. The great thing about Downsize DC is that we accept fellow travelers. You don't have to agree with you and me, for example, Harry. We want a destination that would be very, very small government. You could just believe that the government needs to be smaller than it is today, and you could still work with us on the proposals we have. You can join our direction.
Even on this one, that you just want government to be more responsible.
Right, and so we're attracting people from all over the place. I get emails, you know, 2-3 a week from people who are liberal. I get emails from people who are members of the Constitution Party. I get them from conservative Republicans. We get them from libertarians, obviously, quite a few of them. But we're hearing from a spectrum of people. The only people we're not hearing for is hearing from is the establishment insiders. So, you know, in response to this, our number one objective, the thing that I would say is our key strategy, is what we call the strategy of more. We want to get to the point where we have such a large audience that we cannot be ignored. A politician, this is the way I like to put it, is merely an opportunist looking for a parade that's marching somewhere, and he wants to get in front of it. And at Downsize DC, we're building a parade for small government.
Very good. All right, the second, from a purely idealistic perspective, isn't this attempting to employ government to cap the knees of government? I find it odd and maybe even a paradox that a libertarian organization would try to use the power of the state. Maybe this is a case of where the greater principle of limiting government needs to prevail over the principle of never trying to solicit government. Well, I heard this especially from libertarians when I was running for president. Well, how can you be running for president wanting to be a part of the government yourself? You want to be a politician, so forth. And you're talking against the government and talking against politicians and so forth. Well, we are using the only means that is available to reduce government. And it may not be the only way. It may be that just building enough excitement, just building a mass of people so big and so overwhelming that eventually the senators and the congressmen fall on their own swords. But we don't know. But what we're trying to do is to use every means possible, short of actually asking for government to give us some money to do this. What do you have to say, Jim?
Well, two things real quick. First of all, Downsize DC is nonpartisan. We are not libertarians. Now, while I may personally be a libertarian, and you, Harry, are a libertarian, and our viewpoints tend to reflect a libertarian outlook on the world, as I just explained, Downsize DC is a direction, and we are attracting a wide spectrum of people to this direction, and you don't have to be a libertarian to support the Read the Bills Act, and it wasn't my first concern. But, you know, I kind of wish, instead of an email that Pierre, I believe, he said his name was, I wished he had been actually called in the show, because I would immediately ask him a question: what is the value of the United States Constitution? The Constitution, as most libertarians interpret it, I know, having been one, that they see that as a document that's designed, particularly the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, to limit the powers of the federal government. We're operating in a spirit that's very consistent with that. We're saying there's no, the battle cry of the revolution was no taxation without representation, and we're saying no legislation without representation. If they're not going to do their job, then we need to have, just like the Constitution provides, further things that tie them down. And that's what we're attempting to do here.
Very good. We also have an email from JR in Ohio, which we probably won't have time to get to tonight, but I'll save it for next week, JR, and deal with it. It's on an entirely different subject. And any others that you want to send in during the week, I'll deal with in the next show. And Jim, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us. This has really been very informative and very encouraging also. And I wish you the very, very best at downsizedbc.org.
Thank you, Harry, and I believe we're going to do it.
Okay.